The headlines this hour. Iran's president says the US and Israel plan to attack two countries in the Middle East within the next 3 months. The Afghan government blames US-led forces for an attack that left scores of civilians dead. And in Iraq, twin blasts kill over a dozen people near the holy city of Karbala.
You're watching World News here on Plus TV. We're coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran.
Thanks for joining us. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says the US and Israel plan to attack two countries in the Middle East within the next 3 months. He says it's part of a plot to exert more pressure on Iran.
We have very precise information that the Americans have hatched a plot, and based on that they want to wage a psychological war against Iran. What the Russian president recently said was basically a prelude to that plot. They plan to attack at least two countries in the region in the next 3 months, and the US has two goals to achieve in this plot. Firstly, they want to hamper Iran's progress and development. They are against our progress. And secondly, they want to save the Zionist regime, because this regime has reached a deadlock and thinks it can be saved through a new military conflict.
Well, Ahmadinejad made the comments in an exclusive interview with Press TV. He warned US President Barack Obama against pursuing policies carried out by his predecessor, George W. Bush. He also warned Russian officials about acting against their own interests by playing into the hands of Washington. Meanwhile, he said Iran will resume nuclear talks with the West in early September. He added that he wants Turkey and Brazil to participate in the upcoming negotiations.
Members of the European Union have approved a fresh round of sanctions against Iran over its nuclear program. Tehran says the move is illegal, runs counter to mutual understanding, and will have no effect on the country's energy sector.
The European Union headquarters in Brussels. Intensive talks by EU foreign ministers come to an end after they agree on fresh anti-Iran measures, a step which Tehran sees in sharp contrast with diplomatic efforts it has been pursuing over the past few years. The unilateral sanctions target Iran's energy sector. Insurance and financial sanctions are also included. Reacting to the decision, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said the sanctions have no legal basis and will only complicate the situation. Ramin Mehmanperest said those measures will not affect Iran, and to the country's oil minister, sanctions against the energy sector will not be able to reduce Iran's oil production, as natural gas and oil fields are being fully operated by Iranian companies. The new set of sanctions will take effect only a few weeks after the UN Security Council ratified a fourth round of sanctions against Iran. Iran has repeatedly rejected sanctions as an illegal move, saying diplomacy is the only means through which U.S.-sponsored disputes over its nuclear program could be settled. And the country's officials say they are still pursuing that path. Iran has just submitted a letter to the IAEA chief declaring its readiness for talks over the Tehran declaration to swap its low-enriched uranium for nuclear fuel for a medical reactor.
This is, in fact, a manifestation of Iran political determination for the meeting for this humanitarian project within the framework of the IAEA.
Now, the new measures by the European Union, many say, will prove counterproductive, as Iran insists it will once again turn sanctions into opportunities, just as it did in the past three decades.
The Afghan government has blamed U.S.-led NATO forces for a recent airstrike that killed 52 civilians, including women and children.
Well, this after the Afghan president ordered an investigation into the deadly strike. A government official confirms the attack happened in the south of Afghanistan on Friday, when civilians crammed into a house to flee fighting between NATO troops and alleged militants. The incident surfaced after people in the area said helicopter gunships fired on villagers who fled to safety. NATO says there's no evidence civilians were killed in the attack. US-led forces in Afghanistan regularly launch attacks on alleged militant hideouts, but the strikes usually result in civilian casualties.
Another blow to the U.S. military over its war strategies. A huge cache of reports has leaked to the media about the untold killing of Afghan civilians by U.S.-led forces.
The founder of whistleblower website WikiLeaks accuses the U.S. Army of massively covering up the data on civilian casualties in Afghanistan.
About this topic.
WikiLeaks has released over 90,000 classified papers, including untold details of the war through the Pentagon files and field reports. The new revelation is seen as one of the biggest leaks in the U.S. military's history. Julian Assange has told journalists at a press conference in London that a large number of Afghan casualties is caused by US-led troops targeting civilians. He blames foreign forces for repeatedly reporting about insurgent casualties, while the released documents show most of the dead are civilians.
You will find that US military units, when self-reporting, of course, often speak in exculpatory language, redefine civilian casualties as insurgent casualties, downplay the number of casualties. For the Kunduz report, we see that the initial report from the field was 56 insurgents killed, no civilians killed, but we know from later reportage investigation, in fact, most of the people killed were civilians and there was some hundred and something.
Assange has refrained from rejecting the possibility of war crimes committed by the US-led forces, giving examples of missile strikes that killed children. He has also insisted on the reliability of the leaked reports and say they include a majority of regular US Army activities. The White House has condemned the leaks as irresponsible. Washington says the leaked records refer to a period before the current U.S. strategy came into effect. However, Assange sees no change in Washington's policy regarding the ongoing war.
But what we see is that the U.S. Army is an enormous boat that is extremely hard to turn around. And the cover-up of those sorts of crimes begins at the bottom and moves its way to the top. So it is quite hard to enact a new policy and have it filter down to a change in practice. A new policy by Obama does not mean a change of practice by the US military anymore.
A NATO helicopter has crashed in Afghanistan's capital Kabul. A NATO spokesman says two foreign soldiers have been killed. The helicopter went down near a military camp in the eastern part of the city. The cause of the crash is under investigation, but technical problems are thought to have been behind the incident. This is the second foreign helicopter that has crashed in Afghanistan since the beginning of July. In a similar incident on Thursday, two NATO soldiers died after their helicopter went down near Lashkar Gah, the capital of Afghanistan's southern Helmand province.
In southern Iraq, at least 21 people have been killed in car bomb blasts near the holy city of Karbala. Dozens have also been wounded. A provincial official says the blast took place on the road between Karbala and the nearby holy Shia city of Najaf. The explosions targeted Shia pilgrims visiting Karbala on the eve of celebrations for the birth anniversary of the 12th Shia Imam. The blast followed another car bomb explosion in the capital, Baghdad, earlier in the day. The blast near the Al Arabiya Television Bureau killed four people and injured another 16.
You're watching the news here on Press TV. A quick check of the headlines this hour. Iranian president says the U.S. and Israel plan to attack two countries in the Middle East within the next 3 months. The Afghan government blames U.S.-led forces for an attack that left scores of civilians dead. And in Iraq, twin blasts kill over a dozen people near the holy city of Karbala.
So ahead right here on Press TV, the Global Islamic Branding and Marketing Forum at Oxford University. Stay tuned for that and a lot more. Israel's Defense Minister Ehud Barak has threatened to attack Lebanon, not just the Hezbollah. Here's more.
Despite the apparent political disturbance that has taken place in Lebanon lately as a result of reports of a possible indictment that would touch Hezbollah members, Lebanese officials have mutually refused any Israeli threats. The latest threats came from Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak, who said that in any future war, Israel will see it as legitimate to hit any target that belongs to the Lebanese state, not just to Hezbollah. In the summer of 2006, the former Sinjar government was considered a close ally of the Bush administration, and hence, this government was under the protection of Washington.
Such threats are not new. Our unity is a deterrence against any Israeli threat. Israel does not need a pretext to attack, but we should still not give the regime any excuse.
These threats come as Lebanon entered a critical juncture in its internal politics. As reports of a possible indictment of Hezbollah members in the Rafiq Hariri case created a quarrel between Hariri's future movement at Hezbollah, which considers an indictment part of a plan to distort the image of the resistance. Arab leaders coming to visit Lebanon in the next few weeks will reportedly seek an internal agreement very much similar to the Doha Agreement of 2008, which created a coalition government and legitimized the arms of the resistance. Analysts believe that Barak's statements at this particular time are aimed at weakening these Arab efforts, which seek to ease the internal Lebanese tension.
This is a political message. It is linked to what is happening in Lebanon amid the special tribunal. Barak is telling the Lebanese that national consensus should never include arms for Hezbollah.
A possible visit of prominent Arab and regional heads of state, most prominent of whom are the Saudi king and the Syrian president, in the coming week, could serve as part of a political agreement to take place in Lebanon. Any such agreement will undoubtedly again shed light on the role of Hezbollah as a resistance movement, which has changed Lebanon's regional status, as its leader, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, has said. Maryam Saleh, Press TV, Beirut.
A top U.S. defense official has visited Beirut for talks with Lebanese officials and U.N. commanders operating in the south of the country. U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Affairs, Alexander Virchow, met with Lebanese President Michel Soleiman and Premier Saad Hariri. The agenda was topped by American military aid to Lebanon. A U.S. embassy statement quotes Virchow as saying that Congress has approved $100 million in aid to the Lebanese military for 2010. Virchow's trip comes a day after Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah accused Washington of spending billions of dollars on tarnishing the Lebanese movement's image.
The construction of the Arab highway is causing an environmental crisis in Lebanon's Bekaa region. Press TV's Fazia Harb has more.
One of the major infrastructural projects underway in Lebanon is the Arab Highway in the Bekaa region in the east of the country. Phase 2 of the project starts from the Mderij area in Bekaa, passing through Jdita, Al-Marj, Majdal Anjar, and ending on the Syrian border. When the construction work started, there was huge public outcry against the change in the route of the highway, as people said it would damage their farmlands and sources of water. This man is saying that the people of Jdita and Bekaa in general have waited the Arab highway for 40 years, but unfortunately the current route it follows, which was chosen by the Council of Development and Reconstruction, did not meet the people's expectations. As for this man, he's saying that the highway passes over the wells, which supply 7 to 8 towns with drinking water. That is to say that there are about 200 to 300,000 people who drink this water. As for the citizen, he is complaining that the highway brings too much dust into his shop, and most of his products are dirty because of that. According to Mr. Nasbedi, a senior environmental researcher, before the construction of any such projects, various studies have to be carried out to assess their impact on the environment as well as human beings.
When you know that a project has potential impacts on the environment that can be serious, you conduct a full EIA, which includes an assessment of all the impacts that can happen as a result of the project, the possible alternatives, the mitigation measures that have to be taken, the environmental management plan that for the whole project during implementation and during operation later on.
But such studies were not conducted, and the former government officials attribute this to political reasons.
This change of route was strictly political. There was not a profound study about the issue, and the passage of the Arab highway in its current route poses a huge damage to the environment and the natural water.
People's protests fell on deaf ears, and the project, with all its environmental implications and negative effects on the agriculture, got underway. The Bekaa area, which receives around 850 millimeters of rainfall annually, is Lebanon's most important farming region and accounts for 40% of Lebanon's arable land. Fawzia Harb, Press TV, Bekaa.
BP is expected to announce the resignation of its chief, Tony Hayward, in the next few days. The move comes almost 100 days after the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico began. The decision was reportedly made during a BP board meeting in London on Monday. Reports say Hayward will leave his position in October. Instead, he'll be offered a job as a non-executive director with BP's joint venture in Russia. The British oil giant has not made an official announcement about Hayward's fate yet, but reports of his departure sent BP shares up 5%. The gaffe-prone CEO's handling of the oil spill in the Gulf has infuriated many in the U.S.
Oxford University has opened the first session of a global Islamic branding and marketing forum. Ministers and academics from Muslim countries attending the gathering are discussing how to market Islamic products to the rest of the world. Press TV's Hassan Ghani has more.
The last few years have witnessed an explosion in demand from the world's 1.3 billion Muslims for products and financial services that are in line with their Islamic ethics. The launch of forums like this one at Oxford University are a recognition of that.
New relationship. Here in the university's Said Business School, academics, corporate leaders and government ministers are discussing the rise of the Muslim consumer and the power of Islamic finance. The demand for Sharia-compliant financial products around the globe is now thought to be worth around $2 trillion. In addition to that, non-Muslim markets are now seeing the value of such products, with Islamic financial institutions having weathered the global financial crisis better than their more mainstream competitors.
Today, we are all over the world, but less than 10% in the world, about 20% in Malaysia. There is great potential, and if we do it right, we should be able to be about 25% of global transactions in Islamic banking within the next decade or so.
Financial products aside, here in the UK, there's also been a recognition of the spending power of the Muslim consumer.
The spending power has come out to sort of the third generation of Muslims now, who clearly define themselves more and more by faith. And that spending is coming out in sort of their purchasing habits now, and you're seeing the market react, and new products are coming on the market. Bigger brands are being forced to change their approach to them as a consumer.
But some feel that one key demographic has been forgotten in the rush to capitalize on the Muslim market.
Muslim women have a huge purchasing power, 50% of the Muslim population, and they probably make 3/4 of buying decisions in the household, buying for themselves, their children, their husbands, households, extended family. Yet this segment is totally ignored.
Some feel that in order to compete on a level playing field, Sharia-compliant products should also be targeted at non-Muslim consumers.
We have to now come to a stage where we have to create products which has a value proposition to enable us to sell to non-Muslims. And by selling to non-Muslims, we are creating economies of scale.
As Muslim countries develop and diversify, they'll need to work on creating and marketing their brands to the rest of the world. At the same time, Western corporations, acutely aware of this relatively untapped market, are trying to expand into new profitable areas. Whether that's a good or bad thing is still up for debate. Hassan Ghani, Press TV, Oxford.
And that was our latest headlines here on Press TV News. Do make sure to log on to our website at presstv.com for the latest on all our top stories. And our top story of the day being the Iranian president saying the US and Israel plan to attack two countries in the Middle East within the next 3 months. That and more from around the world on our website, presstv.com.
A tearful Raul leaves Real Madrid. Sheena will have all the details in Sports International. Stay